Not long after, a California jury awarded $289 million to a school groundskeeper who said the product Roundup led to him getting lymphoma, the Environmental Working Group issued a report that Weed Killer was also discovered in oat cereals and granola bars, including some organic products. The herbicide glyphosate is used in Roundup. In a moment, we'll hear from a researcher who is still looking into the connection between certain illnesses and glyphosate. But first, I turn to Alexis Temkin to talk about the Environmental Working Group's report. She is a toxicologist with EWG. Alexis, let's talk about the basics. How did you go about collecting samples? What was the whole process?
So we tested a total of 45 conventional products and 16 organic products. And what we found was that in 43 of the 45, so all but two of the conventional products, there were detectable levels of glyphosate. And in five of the 16 organic products, we also found trace detectable levels of glyphosate.
I think people would be quite stunned by the fact that they were found, so many were found in organically grown as well. Did that surprise you at all? Did you go in with any thoughts about that beforehand?
Yeah, that's a great question. It did surprise us a little bit. Some of the organic companies have come out with statements on their website talking about how this type of cross-contamination of glyphosate is actually a problem for them. So we weren't really sure what we were going to see or where we might find it, but there has been acknowledgement that the widespread use of glyphosate, there's about 300 million pounds of it used every year, can lead to contamination of organic products.
Was the detectable level above what is considered to be at least acceptable, is it at a level that is really alarming when it comes to the possibility of affecting children's health or adults or seniors, whatever it may be?
What EWG did was compare this to our health benchmark, which we developed based off of a similar protocol that the California state scientists used to develop their no significant risk level. What's a little bit different is that we developed our level to be specifically protective for children's health. And so when we did that, we found that 31 of the 45 samples were above our health guideline if children were consuming about 2 cups of these products every day for an extended period of time. All of the products, though, were within legal limits and under limits that are set by the EPA.
Are there certain changes that EWG would like to see in terms of how the government is measuring these things, whether there should be more regulation, and what sort of regulation that would look like?
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. So what's really interesting about oats and other grains is that glyphosate can actually be applied to these in what's called pre-harvest application. So this is when you use glyphosate at the very end of the season, right before harvest, you apply it to the crops and it actually kills the crops. And so what happens is the glyphosate that's used can actually get into the final grains, which gets into the final products. So you can have really a small percentage of the overall use of glyphosate contributing to a high dietary exposure.
Are we seeing very different standards when it comes to state to state? Obviously, California tends to be very progressive on this sort of thing, and this is where the recent trial was held as well. Is this something that where changes would need to be made at the federal level? Could they be made at the state to state level? Is that possible?
To my knowledge, I think California is the only state that's come out and actually derived a no significant risk level, and also the only state that sort of has this legislation in place that would require either a warning for cancer-causing ingredients or something like that. But ultimately, when we're dealing with pesticides, it's more of a federal regulation.
Now, there are some who've argued that this has been experiments in mice, that we haven't, in fact, seen whether it's conclusive enough. What do you make when people say that?
You know, for something that's been linked to cancer and where we see a lot of studies on risks of something that's going to be in our diet, it's really important to pay attention to those studies that find positive findings, especially when they're done well. And so there's evidence in animals, there's also evidence in epidemiological studies, and then there's other studies that look at, for instance, a pregnancy cohort. They found associations between glyphosate levels in the urine of pregnant women and shortened gestational periods. So there's a lot of sort of other non-cancer health effects that we're starting to see elucidated from some more studies as we start to learn about the extent of dietary glyphosate.
Alexis Temkin is a toxicologist with the Environmental Working Group. University of California, San Diego professor Paul Mills leads that university's herbicide awareness and research project. In part, it does research on how glyphosate exposure may affect human health. I spoke with him earlier and started by asking him how much evidence there is at this point to connect glyphosate exposure to human illnesses, or whether the testing on mice is where any possible evidence rests.
Despite that all of us have been ingesting these compounds for at least 2 decades or more, there's very little actual research, certainly no clinical trials on human beings. Yes, most of it is in the rats and the mice. And this observation is really what led me to my first project in this area that we published back in October in JAMA. I had gone through the biomedical literature on the website PubMed that you might know about. It's maintained by the U.S. Library of Congress. And I was surprised to see there was very little, actually, I couldn't find any studies documenting just longitudinally how has the change in exposure to us as human beings been since the introduction of the genetically modified foods. So that was our first publication, and it was showing that there's been a significant increase, over 1,000-fold percent over the last 23 years, which is the time period of our study. We followed 100 people repeatedly over time, looking at their excretion. And of course, it went up as we've all had more exposure.
You really have to do the research and find out for real and truly find out whether it does have an effect, assumptions aside.
Agreed. We've been making some assumptions based on the animal literature that you made reference to, particularly on the side of liver health. We've examined several studies. There's 5 of them out there now where rats were fed very low doses of glyphosate or Roundup directly. And these were doses lower than your average human being is exposed to. And those studies were able to document toxicity to the liver and the kidneys. That's been our focus. So our current studies are examining, does this relationship hold true in human beings? And we're in the midst of those studies still, but I can say preliminarily that we do see that signal the same as we've seen in the animal studies. That is, those folks who have poor liver function, whether it's non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, for example, they have higher excretion of glyphosate, which to us reflects that they have higher exposure. Is it through their diet? Is it through spraying it as some kind of a horticulturist? You know, we'll dig into that. But the point is they're getting exposure, and there is this correlation with liver function. But this is just the first phase of our study, and we're going to pursuing this project so we can have most confidence with our observation.
In an ideal world, would you like to see, even if they weren't necessarily changed, FDA, EPA standards, would you like to see a serious commitment to trying to figure out what is going on in terms of ways of catching things
yes.
in a better, and is it even more important when you talk about some of the work you've done with glyphosate?
So, yes, I would like to see that. In my naivete, I had mentioned to some colleagues last year when our findings were first published, I would like to see industry set up a fund that independent scientists could apply for grants and conduct some large-scale, multi-center studies that are routinely done with other industries, as I mentioned, for example, pharma, where we could take individuals who are, say they have a disease, maybe it's liver disease, cancer disease, or kidney, and put them on an organic diet and track them for a year and see how they do. We could begin to uncover whether there is a signal here or not. Or conversely, we could keep, well, if we could get folks willing to do it, but individuals who are, say, following an organic diet and switch them to a non-organic for even just a few months to see what might begin to change. We just need some independent research, and that would give us confidence in the answers.
Paul Mills leads UCSD's Herbicide Awareness and Research Project.